I can't believe you actually shot that hillbilly with an arrow.
Any man who tries to take my popcorn, that's what's going to happen to him, okay? End of story.
Okay. All right, what are we doing today?
P.S. I love you.
Oh, I love you too, man.
Okay, well, enough of that. Grab your popcorn. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, David Kalisa.
Hello again. How are we doing?
I think we are doing just fine. As you said before, we are changing it up a little bit today because David here likes to throw me a curveball occasionally, and we are doing a rom-com. I would say it's more of a rom-dramedy than anything.
I'll agree with that.
Like, it's there is comedy. There is romance, but there is also a crap ton of drama.
That is very true, but it is all balanced out very well and is a very good watch. My wife and I like to, that's kind of our movie now, and with it being our anniversary week, I felt it fitting to pick a movie to kind of pay homage to her, and that is kind of true to my heart.
Nice. Well, happy anniversary, my friend.
Well, thank you very much.
I remember the wedding just like it was yesterday.
I remember like it was 4 years ago.
You were drunk.
I was not, actually.
Most everyone else was drunk.
Yeah, I kept a pretty good cool for being my wedding.
Yeah, you were doing pretty well. So, but yes, I do remember because you and the other groomsmen did a lovely little jig to an Irish song.
Oh,
I remember that.
Flogging Molly.
A Flogging Molly.
Yeah, it's... Drunken Lullabies. That's our go-to song at weddings. We've done that every friend wedding so far.
And to keep up with the Irish music, which is a fairly large part of this movie. But yes, we are doing P.S. I Love You, which was originally released in 2007, December 21st, 2007. It has a runtime of 125 minutes, and the budget, I thought this was actually pretty nice. It was $30 million to actually film, and made $156 million domestically.
Pretty so good. It had a lot of star power in it, though.
Very good success, huge amount of star power, and we will get to the cast later on. But this was definitely one of those movies that had a ton of great acting talent, and some of that talent... like, immediately took off afterwards and started doing a bunch of other movies. Some of it kind of had a little bit of a slow burn, but now we've got some household name actors that are in this movie. But then there's also some well-established mainstay actresses in this entire film. But let's kind of get to the basic plot of the movie of Holly and Jerry.
Holly and Jerry, the... what you would consider your standard couple. You can tell they're still, you know, a little bit not newlywed, but you know they're still early on in their marriage and in their relationship.
Well, I mean, kind of, yeah. But they said that she was 19 when they got married, and in the movie she turns 30. So
that's a year after he died, wasn't it?
Yeah, turned 30 a year after he died, and so they were together, you know, for a good while. Beforehand, but they had a very quick romance and then marriage, and everyone thought they were too young and all of that. But I wanted to point out one thing here before we even get into like the actual plot of the movie. The first scene is amazing.
Oh, hands down, it sets the whole tone for it.
It is one of the best and most realistic scenes up to a point of couples actually fighting. At least, for me personally.
No, I 100% agree. My wife and I, we've definitely done some comparisons.
Yeah, I mean,
and whatnot, and it's actually depending on the time and everything. Sometimes we watch the movie and it has brought up other fights.
Yes.
So
I mean, I know for a fact when I was watching it, like I had that moment of like, wait, I've had this argument before, like almost verbatim.
Yeah.
And like, even them walking up the stairs, and he's like, just like, you know, hey, blah blah blah, what's I'm cool, what's, why you angry, honey? And she's just like silent and deadpan, and he's just like, what did I say? Was it this? Was it that? Like, no, it's like, I don't know. But
was it something that I actually didn't do? And she just looks at him. Oh, yeah. No. It's something I did. When I watched it just recently, you know, get refreshed on it. And I, while I was watching, I was sending Snapchats to my wife, joking around, going, yep, this is me. This is your life now.
I did crack up, though, because when they're going up the stairs and he, like, stops her and stuff, and she's just, like, staring at him with the fury.
Stare.
And he goes, you're not going to make me sleep in the bathtub again, are you? And she just walks past him.
He's
continuing the conversation. She's like, it's like, okay, you're not going to say anything until we get into the apartment. Got it. Okay. And then there's that conversation that they have afterwards, which is, you know, they talk about where they're living at. Like, what are they going to do for money? Like, when are they going to have kids? What else did they go on about?
Oh,
like,
mother-in-law.
Like, yeah. You know, the mother-in-law doesn't neither mother like likes the other, the other person. And just like, oh man, it's like, it's such a surreal kind of moment for any couple that fights like that.
It's a surreal moment just for any married couple in general, because I mean, like you said, it's an immediate, you know, just, level of connection to the film.
Yes.
And you're just immediately drawn into it, like, this is real. Like, yep. I can totally picture this happening, or it has already happened.
There's no happy setup or anything for this movie. It's just like, bang, right into an argument. And then, to completely jump gears, it jumps ahead, like, from like the fall or whatever, like, to the winter, and Jerry's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
No downtime. There's no transition. There's no, like, oh, it's like, here's the diagnosis, and he's going to die. They don't even tell you how he died until
it's way later, like, in the
way
film.
Way later.
But yeah, you see them be a couple. They're back in bed. Everything's okay. You go through the credits, see who's all
there's,
in it.
There's the striptease cool little, scene.
Yep.
There's by Gerard Butler.
So you have your little montage while the music's going, and then they're going back to the bar, and it's for his sort of eulogy,
yeah,
funeral, whatever
his
you want
Irish
to call it.
Irish wake, yeah. Yes. Because Jerry is Irish, Holly is not. The novel that this is based off of, they are both Irish, and they live in Ireland. But they decided to change it up a little bit and make it better. And actually, the author completely agreed that the story works very well with the American side of the audience. So
I'll bring that up later on. I have a question to go off of that based on a character that we meet later on in the film.
Gotcha. But that's what's crazy about this movie is that it starts out, it's very real, very realistic, and then it's just like, bang, right into the tragedy that is the entire premise of this movie.
Yep. Widowed before she even turns 30.
Yes.
No kids. And does...
But they loved each other intensely. And so this then leads to her 30th birthday, where her family shows up, and she's like... The apartment is trashed, and she's singing along with some musical. I forgot which one it is, but it's Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. Blanking on her name. Oh my God, I'm so horrible when it comes to my movies. she's singing along, and like they show up, and she's just like has this weird interaction with them because she's basically been living in her apartment.
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks since his funeral, and she's just a complete wreck.
Yep.
You know, has not left since.
This is when the hook of the movie shows up.
And who do you think the hook of the movie is?
Letters.
Oh, okay.
Keep in mind, this movie was in 2007. They don't really give a time frame for when it is, so you just have to kind of assume that it was in the same year that it was filmed. And cell phones still aren't massively, like, prevalent throughout everything. Smartphones certainly aren't, like, really that prevalent.
No, no social media, nothing
like
that.
And there's, like, none of that in this entire movie. What it is, it gives the setup. A cake is delivered with a taped message from Jerry, and basically him saying, hey, it's like, I decided to do this thing because I'm dying and you're going to be all alone. And so I wanted to do something to like make you happier. And so just follow these letters as they come to you and do what they say. It's like, you got to promise me that you will do exactly what they say. And she's like, okay, fine. And that's when like everything starts to kind of go a little chaotic, but chaos is good for her because it gets her away from everything that she's dealing with.
Right, absolutely. And it also sets a, you know, it breaks up the little bit of sadness that you know, you're seeing her go through. And of course, just the general tone of the film draws the viewers back in to a different thing of, okay, where the letter's going to take her, you know, who all is going to get one, and what exactly are the letters going to say, of course.
Yes. Along the way, she's interacting with the people around her, friends and family members. She's constantly going and talking to her mom about different stuff, you know, just because, you know, I mean, it's when your mom is an integral part of your life, you know, that's who you're going to go and rely upon a lot. This guy, Daniel, played by Harry Connick Jr., starts to, like, mack on her a little and doesn't really get anywhere for the most part.
Oh, yeah, definitely for the most part. It's just so awkward.
I'm just saying, though. I mean, like, if you're going to do a comparison, though, of, like, Gerard Butler and Harry Connick Jr., I'm going with Harry Connick Jr. I'm sorry, but I'm going with Harry Connick Jr.
You, sir, are wrong.
Nope, I am not wrong.
Well, that's why King Leonidas would kick you off of the Empire State Building for not choosing him.
Yeah, I'm sure. But Harry Connick Jr. Was the tail gunner for the Memphis Belle, so I don't want to hear it. And he also fought aliens alongside Will Smith.
Ooh.
So, yes, the movie progresses along very nicely. She keeps getting more letters. He plans a trip for her to go to Ireland. And there she, like, meets with this family and, like, has these really great sort of conversations. And she, like, gets to deal with things as they come.
Well, and a great usage that the director did in the film was the usage of flashbacks.
Yes.
To see exactly what was so, like, memorable or, you know, kind of what she held close to her heart in these scenarios or settings.
Yes.
You know, when she goes to the karaoke bar or when she goes back
to
Ireland.
That's a great scene.
And stuff like that. You know, you get to see both the present scene that happens and the scene that, you know, she remembers most with her, you know, bladed husband.
And
that's also a really cool way that Gerard Butler is still in the film because he is in all these flashbacks.
Yes, yes. But that karaoke scene, actually, I loved it a lot because of two different things. One, Gerard Butler was supposed to be drunk. Jerry was, you know, like drunk on stage, like at the karaoke bar singing Mustang Sally.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be drunk, but the way that he like is antagonizing his wife to like get her up on stage, I would totally do that.
Oh, absolutely.
That is totally me.
Yes.
I would absolutely do that to try and get my wife to go up on stage and do something crazy like that. She would never do it, but I would totally try to get her.
And I hope you have a big enough bathtub to sleep in.
I do not. I'm a giant man. That would not work. But two, the death stare that she gives him that entire time when he's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so amazing. Because
it's
like,
so
if,
real.
If I ever got a chance to actually meet Hillary Swank and ask her, it's like, how in the world did you do the wife death stare so well? It's like, because it's like, it's amazing. Like, she doesn't break eye contact. She is very still. Her face does not move. And it's just so great.
And for as funny as he is being, and for the, you know, the roar of the crowd and everything, that's pretty hard to do.
Yep. Very hard to do. So I kudos to her, man, on that acting job, because that was incredible. I don't know if she was, like, married at this time or not, but, man, she nailed the wife death stare. So, yes.
No, but anyway, yeah, so back to the thing, though. The flashbacks are just remarkable use on the director's part for, you know, having you link together why everything is so important and why Jerry is having his wife do everything.
Yes.
And it's just remarkable use of it, in my opinion.
Yes, very much so. The flashbacks are used to great effect to move the story along because at its heart, this story is honestly about Holly not only like dealing with the loss of the love of her life, but also like sort of being tied back to everything in the past, so like to where she can't really progress forward. And it kind of boils down to Jerry knows her so well that the only way to get her past it is to kind of walk her through each step to get her to the point where she can start walking on her own.
Okay, yeah, I follow you.
So he and that is proven throughout the movie when every time that he does like when like he did the recorder with the cake, he makes a joke and he goes, "Come on now, that's funny." And she goes, "No, it's not." And he goes, "No, it isn't." And it's just it's those types of moments that she has with him after the fact where they're still having a conversation despite the fact that he recorded that like a long time before that.
Yes, so, absolutely. And then, you know, last thing I'll say about the flashbacks are really what keep this in the romantic genre mm-hmm. of films
mm-hmm.
because without them, then you're just going to have a lot more of, you know, the dramatic effect
yeah.
of it and whatnot. But that's what, you know, as we said, it's going to be the romantic dramedy.
So this is where I like it is a romantic comedy, but this is where I kind of draw the line a little bit, where it took me out of the sort of realism that the movie actually has. And that's when she goes to visit his parents. They give her the letter, and she goes out to his fortress, the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about like how they first met and that kind of stuff. The scene of how they first met is just straight romantic comedy trash, in my opinion.
Why?
Because it's so just like they meet walking down the road and he just like instantly like connects with her and like kisses her or she kisses him and then he kisses her and she's just like, that was the most perfect first kiss of all time. And he's like, it was the second and this is the third. And then she's like, you know, separates from him and she's wearing his jacket and he's just like, you have my jacket. And she's like, yeah, I know, I'm keeping it. And she's like, if we get back together, then like, you know, that'll be the end of everything that we know or end of life as we know it. Like, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I'm playing at this pub. And she's like, don't tell me.
And then
it's
runs
like,
away.
If I make it to the right town and the right pub, then we'll know that it's blah, 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 blah. And I was just like, this is the plot to Serendipity, which is another romantic comedy.
It's a good movie, though.
It is a good movie, but that's beside the point. That's where it's just like, okay, this is where it veered off, and I was like,
You can't have this type of movie without following the formula a little bit.
I wanted the rest of it, though. It's like the one time where I think that she is out of character, and she's not like the way she is throughout the rest of the movie.
But you have to remember, that's when they first met. She's only 19
yes.
or 18.
So in Ireland at that time.
Right,
so.
You know, the trip before college or whatever like that.
Yeah,
so no,
yeah.
She's not going to be intelligent or as intelligent or, you know, as
yeah.
serious or whatever. Like, you know, she's just sort of this naive high school student that's just out exploring Europe, you know, trying to figure out what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually a pretty neat scene because it's –
Oh, and
showing,
the whole
that's
scene with
showing,
the dog, too. I was just yeah. like, okay, whatever.
Well, it's, like,
it's a dog.
It's
like,
kind of showing the, you know, Hilary Swank's, you know, acting abilities to go,
true.
You know, to show the two different levels of the same character
yeah.
in the same movie.
I thought it was interesting, you know, but it was also to me just like, okay, this is a trope and it needs to die.
Cheesy, yes.
Yeah.
Still necessary, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want to show how they met, but it was still just like, okay, whatever. It's like, but then this leads to the next introduction of the Irishman, of which I was cracking up because if you remember earlier on in the film when she goes out to him. Like, this is after the funeral, and she's, like, having kind of a dream about him or a memory about him, of him playing the guitar. But she says the line, she's like, I can't sleep alone, and he's like, babe, I'm right here, and blah, 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 blah. And then she goes, do all Irishmen sing? And he goes, only the well-hung ones, to which then the next Irish guy that they show is singing as well. And it just
kept coming back to you like that?
Like, oh, God, that's a horrible joke, and yet now I'm thinking about it. God dang it. And then, so.
That scene, though, that you just mentioned where she goes out onto the couch or whatever like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably one of the more gut-wrenching scenes
mm-hmm.
for either husband or wife to watch.
And he's singing that song to her and stuff
like
that.
Oh, and then, you know, it the God, the cinematography of the film was just used so incredibly well because and even though it stays in the same room and barely moves, the camera follows her just enough for him to go off screen for, you know, then when she comes walking back around the couch, it's just pillows.
Yes.
So and it's you either know.
So throughout this entire bit of her going to Ireland, goes to a pub, and therefore and there she meets Negan. Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah.
And the comedian from Watchmen.
Yes. And a couple of other films too. But yes, he he's American and he does a really crappy Irish accent. So does Gerard Butler, because Gerard Butler's Scottish and he definitely didn't exceptionally try to have an Irish accent. But Jeffrey Dean Morgan had a really bad Irish accent too. So it was like they couldn't find one quality like Irish actor to play any of these parts.
No.
I don't think they really tried that hard either. So.
Well, like you said, the budget was only $30 million.
Yeah.
You know, the star power that's in it, they probably, by the time they got down to his little part for the movie, they're like, can't really get somebody that, you know, that good for it.
True. But yes, this does lead to him and Holly. His name is Billy in the movie, actually. So there's Holly, Jerry, and Billy. They end up meeting and hooking up, and then that's when he drops the bomb on her. That he's just like, you know,
he was in
Jerry's band before, and he knows exactly who she is. And then says like one of the dumbest lines that any girl I know of, like not that I have personal experience of this, but trust me, like he drops the line. It's okay, Jerry and I shared everything. It's like. She would have stormed out of there so fast, like because I just know it. But that's not how the movie progresses. So he then backtracks and is just like, that's not what I meant. He's like, basically, it's like, I think that he'd be okay with this. Well, no, he wouldn't be okay with this, but it's fine. It's like he can't really argue about it now.
Totally plays off a horribly timed line.
Yes, yes, he does. but ends up they end up still like sort of not I guess commiserating a little. It's a bit cathartic for them because they've already slept together, obviously. It's like, but then they start having a conversation about Jerry, and it's like it kind of, you know,
like that's their common interest is a horrible way to put it, but
yes,
that's really
yes.
the best way to put it. Also,
it's,
you know,
it's
that's
them,
their that's
it's
their
them
common
remembering.
Ground, and so that's them. They're now able to sort of reminisce about mm-hmm. their memories, you know, and share stuff about it.
Yes.
And it's just, it's horribly timed in a really not the best scenario to do so, but
yes,
that's how the movie is.
Very much so. So they end up going back. They don't really like say anything else about about Billy. Like it just kind of, they just.
No,
kind of,
that was their scene. That was what it was and everything like that.
Goes back. Then she like ends up going out to dinner with Daniel again, and Daniel gets pissed off at her because she calls him Jerry when he makes a joke, and then I mean I'd be pissed off too. But
well, yeah, women get pissed off when we call them the wrong name all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So
we're cheating on them.
Yeah. Jessica, I am not cheating on you. I promise. I swear to God, I'm not doing that. But they goes off. Other crap happens. She has a really great conversation with her mother and like all this other stuff. I know I'm kind of glancing over. There's a lot of deep emotional stuff here. And
oh,
so
yeah. There's no way,
to
dive into all of it.
It's really hard to like unwrap that because you just have to watch the movie and kind of go through it. But it's some good stuff. It's really well written. Like the stuff that they go on about is deeply emotional and usually like it can kind of hit home with anybody.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, because anyone who's dealt with loss, especially just close family member, is going to be dealing with this in some sort of way.
Yes.
Before we get too far away from the character
gotcha.
And progress into it, the thing that I wanted to bring up. So in comparison from movie to book, Billy's character is not in the book.
Yeah, not in the book at all.
So they, you know, he was made up specifically for the motion picture, and I assume that was so that they could sort of, you know, bring it back around to the ending scene,
mm-hmm.
Right before the credits and everything when she's back in Ireland.
Yes.
And, but do you know, how does the book end?
I'm not entirely sure because there were a bunch of changes. But I'm assuming it kind of just ends with her sort of moving on with her life, kind of like how they kind of like how they did with the movie. But
right, because she, you know, she finds her way. She decides, you know, what art she wants to get into, and she's obviously into shoes, as you learn about her character through the movie.
Very early on, like even after their first argument and stuff.
Well,
like
during their first argument, because she's just grabbing shoes and throwing them at him.
She goes, "My shoes are everywhere." He's like, I need to pick them up or they'll think I hate them.
Right. So she's able to become her own business and find her own way and everything, you know, still through the help of her husband in a sense, because the buckle and the strap that snaps during his little striptease scene is what ends up on top of one of her shoes.
Yeah. While he's doing the striptease, he's got suspenders on and he does this thing and a buckle snaps. And flies out and hits her in the face. Hits him in the face. And so, like, that actually did happen. it was entirely accidental.
But that was his reaction to everything. When he was able to stay in character and just continue on the scene. It made a great scene, though. And then, you know, that leads her stubbing her toe and all that stuff with the lamp.
Yes.
So, anyway. Great stuff, though.
Yeah. So, after she goes back home... And she has the whole thing with Daniel. They end up like sort of giving it a shot one more time, and they kiss. And that's when it's like, nope, we have zero chemistry. We're cool. We're friends. You know, like Daniel gets to move on and try to pursue somebody else. And Holly is then just like, okay, well, you know, I've already done this. Like, why not? You know, like I can move on and do some other stuff too. She gets into her whole shoemaking business. And starts progressing on that, and then kind of builds up of her getting her life back in order. She goes back to Ireland with her mother, where her mother then falls in love with Billy's dad. So
I want to ask you about that, because you'd be able to map this out for me. In retrospect, if they both got together with said men and then married said men, what would that make all of them to each other?
Oh, that'd be weird, and I wouldn't even want to try. Yeah, no, I mean, I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, like, morally speaking, I wouldn't say there's nothing wrong with that, because obviously they're not blood related.
Right.
But at the same time, legally speaking, they would be brother and sister.
They'd be step-siblings.
Step-siblings that are, yeah, I'm sure there's some legal precedent for this that's like...
Maybe not in Ireland.
Maybe not in Ireland. Who knows?
Enough Jameson will drown out any morals.
But yeah, they. But that's kind of like where the movie ends, is with a lovely song playing at the end of it, and that song is
"If I Leave This World Alive" by Flogging Molly.
Yes,
it is a just fantastically well written song, and it is actually I got to hear it live a couple months ago over at Pops during the outdoor concert. And before they started playing it, the lead singer actually went into a little bit of the background of the story. It is about after his father passed. And so, knowing that, it really ties in well with the film because of course, that's, you know, related to, losing someone that was so close to them and everything like that. And the lyrics for it are just phenomenal. And it also just goes along really well with just the tone of the movie and everything. Really, really well. Well picked for the credit scene.
Yes. So, but that's where it ends, and it's just a nice, like, sort of, what's the time frame of the movie? It's like a year and a half almost.
Yeah, I'd say roughly a year and a half,
something like that. And so it's sort of a nice collection of the time. The author of the book actually said that as she was writing it. Like that she was experiencing Holly's life at that time. And so, like, you know, I can imagine she was going through some loss or something like that at the time. And I didn't really look much into her backstory. But yeah, it is Holly's movie easily. Jerry is a part of it. He is a big part of it, but he is the catalyst for the rest of the story. But it is Holly's actual story of progressing through life.
And getting over what would be probably one of the most traumatic events of her whole life, but definitely at her life at that time.
I couldn't deal with it. So, I mean, like, I don't know what I would be like if I lost my wife. Like, I mean, I'd probably do exactly what she did and just stay inside the apartment for several weeks. Just play video games or something, like just to drown out my brain. But yeah, it's a very serious film, but at the same time, there is comedy like just all throughout it. Just really great lines delivered by people, really great funny moments that are there. But at the same time, there's that element of sadness and melancholy under absolutely everything.
And that just goes to show you how well it was written and directed, because it's still a movie that if you do see it on it and you do enjoy watching it, you know, if you are into them, you can hop into it and you're not going to feel too bad by the end of it.
Yes.
You know, when you make it through, you're still going to have that feel good attitude by the end of it.
Yes.
You know, to know that even through something horrible, you can move on from it and strengthen yourself from it. And I think that's a really good positive message to put in a film like this.
Absolutely. So a couple of things that I wanted to talk about, though, is we just finished talking about Flogging Molly.
Right.
The soundtrack to this movie is actually really good.
Oh, absolutely.
Not only just the score that they do, which is very Irish-inspired throughout the entire film, but even the songs that they use throughout the film are just really well done. Two of my favorite people from you know, the 2000s are on this soundtrack. You got Last Train Home by Ryan Starr, which is somebody I still follow, and actually people that I've shown Ryan Starr to have been like, was like, wow, like you actually sound like this dude when you sing. And I was like, yeah, that's the reason why I listen to him, because I try to sound like him because he's amazing. And the other one, Rewind by Paolo Nutini. Paolo Nutini is he's British, and he is just an incredible singer-songwriter. Has a couple of just really brilliant songs out there. And then, of course, they've got Same Mistake by James Blunt, which plays at the very end during the credits, and a bunch of different ones on here.
What was the song that they played during his Irish wake?
Oh, that was that the Pogues? Because they got the one from Flogging Molly. They do not have, I think it's Love You Till the End.
Because that song is like the movie as well. That song starts off all, you know, kind of, well, sad and melancholy and whatnot, but then just immediately changes tone and tempo, and lyrics start going, and the priest is even singing along with it. And it's just a hilarious scene. And then, you know, you see Holly's mother give the scowl of, like, of course he would have this song playing in my bar at his wake. And she just does not agree with it, but does really well with the film.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I don't actually know what the song was. I know I was looking up the lyrics, but I don't see
that. That's okay.
Yeah, I can't find it. Either way, it's a really funny song, and the priest singing along with it was just hilarious.
So what do we got for star power in this movie? Where do you want to start with that?
You have a ton here. All right, here, let's just go through the main players here, all right? And we can get into some other. So let's start off with Holly, since she's at the top anyway. You got Holly, Riley Kennedy, played by Hilary Swank. Hilary Swank, in her own right, is just a superb actress. And yes, this was a little bit like, well, technically, this is like in the middle of her career. So she was really like hitting hard with this one, because this was after Million Dollar Baby.
That's
which
what
was
I was
like
about to ask
one.
If it was before or after
but
that.
But I even remember her from way before that in her second film, The Next Karate Kid, which is a horrendous film. But I remember watching it. But her first movie was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film version of it.
I did not see that. I did not know that.
Which also is kind of funny, considering that John McCarthy is played by James Marsters, who played Spike in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV show and the spinoff Angel. And he still goes around to different Comic-Cons all over the place now, just basically being like, hey, I was Spike. And but now you can be like, oh, my God, you were John McCarthy and P.S. I love you.
I bet you if you actually said that to him, that would, like, totally throw him off.
I love
because,
you and that kind of stuff.
Because, you know, at my wife and I, we attended Wizard World earlier this year, and he was actually one of the guests there. Funny that you brought that up. And, you know, on the bill and everything like that, that's how he's introduced or, you know, obviously, it's what he's most known for.
Yes, yes.
And
it's his most
be,
well-known
yes.
Acting job. So
so So that was just I'm going to keep that in mind next time I go to something like that. If I ever do a meet and greet, I'm gonna pick like one
bring
of their.
Something I've learned. Bring up something obscure that only they would remember, and like you are instantly way cooler than every other fan out there. That's why it's like if I ever get a chance to meet like people from Star Trek, I wouldn't ask like. I mean, if I met Patrick Stewart, I wouldn't ask him about X-Men or Star Trek or any of that kind of stuff. I'd be like, man, what was it like filming Dune? Like, seriously.
And you'd probably look
it's like, and why in the world did you do Excalibur? It's like, I don't just like, it's just, he was so weird in that movie. I don't get it.
Maybe that's why he wanted to do it. But it out of the box a little bit.
It wasn't that great. It was a fun movie, but it wasn't like, I don't know, his acting in it was just not that great. Sorry, Sir Patrick, you're an amazing actor, but I know you sometimes worked for the money, so just saying. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that I would want to do, is I'd want to ask them about the random things, you know, about that. Like, so if I ever met Hilary Swank, I'd probably ask her about the next Karate Kid as opposed to anything recent that she's done. But let's see, who do we got next? Jerry Kennedy, played by Gerard Butler.
My wife's all-time favorite actor.
Oh, is he on our list?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes. Right above Bruce Willis.
For those of you who don't know, of which I'm sure you do, the celebrity permission list is the list of celebrities that the spouse is allowed to sleep with if ever given the opportunity. I personally do not have a list, and neither does Jessica, because we're cool, but a lot of other people do, so... There have been numerous conversations in the back office here about that kind of stuff. So.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yes. So Gerard Butler, who of course is King Leonidas.
In 300.
And which honestly, I mean, we watched that movie in theaters at least twice together.
Oh, at least, yeah.
At least twice we went. One time we dragged my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. And she was just like, what in the world did you drag me to?
An epic movie?
But he's been in a ton of stuff. Weirdly enough, he was also in a vampire movie. He was Dracula in Dracula 2000, which was a horrible film, but still he did it. He was in Reign of Fire though, which I actually really liked.
Reign of Fire is a really good film. And
he's
also
in there with Christian Bale. So,
Matthew McConaughey.
And Matthew McConaughey.
He is also the Phantom in Phantom of the Opera.
Yes. He was in Timeline, which is, Michael Crichton book and then turned into movie, which was a pretty decent one. Not a great movie, but it was still, he was very good in that movie.
And then you have him in Law Abiding Citizen,
which is friggin' awesome. So yeah, P.S. I Love You though came out in 2007, the same year as 300. So
he had a good year. He had a really good year because both of them did really good domestically in the box office.
Yeah, Hilary Swank did like three movies that year too. Yeah, she did The Reaping, Freedom Riders, and P.S. I Love You.
Freedom Riders also did really good.
Yeah, and Gerard Butler did 300, Shattered, and P.S. I Love You. The Ugly Truth, I remember that one. That's another sort of romantic comedy.
That's got Katherine Heigl in it.
Yes, who is now on the show Suits, which I am watching. Gamer, which was okay. But yeah, Law Abiding Citizen, Machine Gun Preacher was pretty decent. I've seen The Olympus Has Fallen, London Has Fallen.
Those were good. I really liked him in those. I thought he did pretty well with those.
Let's see. Chasing Mavericks he was really good in Chasing Mavericks. And then Gods of Egypt, which is
horrible.
An abominable film.
I did not like it. But then Den of Thieves.
I have not seen that one yet.
That one, I thought he did phenomenal. The acting in that one is superb, and the storyline is really, really good. It's got really good scenes in it. Definitely put that on your to-watch list.
Coming up next month, though, he has another movie coming out called Hunter Killer, which is a submarine thriller. So going back to like the days of Hunt for Red October and stuff, of which I freaking love that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. I saw the trailer for it today, actually, by accident. Like, I just was going through different movie trailers, and I came across it and was just like, oh, holy crap, this looks good. So yeah, check out Hunter Killer. It's going to be a great like naval warfare epic. So
that covers the... So
we got the two primaries. So let's get into some of the other secondary heavy hitters there. We got Lisa Kudrow from Friends, who's also played a bunch of like side characters in a bunch of other movies.
I mean, aside from Friends, the most notable movie that I remember her from and that she was the main part of would be Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
And she was also really good in Analyze This and Analyze That. She played the wife of Billy Crystal, right? Yeah. But as far as movies go, she picks whatever she wants, and she is Lisa Kudrow. It's that simple. I think it is great, though, that she did get away from, like, the character type.
Oh, Phoebe.
Yeah. And so I was glad that she didn't just play dumb characters, that she kept going on and playing, like, normal people, which was, you know, nice to see. But, yeah, her TV credits, though, are pretty extensive. She's done a massive amount of stuff, just popping into different TV shows and stuff. Moving on, we got Gina Gershon, who, of course, has been in a bunch of really, really bad movies and several really good ones. She just kind of bounces around, you know, from different thing to different thing. But, of course, she's probably very well known for Showgirls, obviously.
Obviously.
And it's like right after that, she did the movie Bound, which was like one of the craziest movies ever. But yeah, she has been steadily working for a very long time. Her IMDb credits are like way longer. They're like longer than Gerard Butler and Hilary Swank combined.
Wow.
Like that's how long she's been working since 1981 in films, and she's just been doing nonstop stuff. And she's been doing a ton of TV shows and voiceover work and name it. She has done it. Gina Gershon is actually a workhorse in the Hollywood circles. Now, on to the other men. We got Harry Connick Jr. as Daniel. And Daniel actually is supposed to have Asperger's syndrome. They don't say that in the movie, but if you know anything about Asperger's syndrome and you watch him in this film, it's very easy to see that he is portraying that. Because he just says kind of, there's no filter between like what he thinks in his brain and what he says out loud.
Yeah,
so.
In my opinion, they wrote that off kind of poorly because, I mean, he's a pretty pivotal character in, you know, in Holly's life throughout the film. And they just kind of make him look like a doofus rather than somebody that just has a, you know, disease of some sort that is actually what is causing it, which I think, you know, if it would have been touched on just a little bit more in the film,
yeah,
I think he would have gotten a little bit more, you know, attention or respect, you know, his character at least.
Yes. So, but he actually is one of these actors that shows up in movies that I just like watching him in. Because he's freaking Harry Connick Jr. He's cool no matter what he does. He just stands there. He looks cool. But he was in Memphis Belle, which is still one of my all-time favorite World War II movies. And then, of course, later on in Independence Day, where he played Captain Jimmy Wilder, he did a couple of things here. He was in, let's see, Life Without Dick, which was in a very interesting film. Bug, P.S. I Love You. And then, oh, he did the Dolphin Tale and Dolphin Tale 2 movies. So there you go.
He was the Dolphin Tale?
I highly doubt it. He played Clay Haskett. But he also shows up in a bunch of different TV shows and stuff like that, including several seasons of American Idol. So he was first on as a guest judge, and then he was on permanently from 2014 to 2016.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, he's one of these dudes that's like is a solid actor if you put him in a film or a TV show, but at the same time he is a Grammy Award winning artist, and so he is an extremely talented musician and singer, and he fights very hard to keep jazz alive and keep it going, especially down in New Orleans, and so he's just a cool all around guy. I'd love to hang out with him.
That's
sometime.
Super neat. I didn't know that about him.
Yeah. So. And actually, you can watch a little mini documentary about him being in New Orleans. And he actually talks about going to he got married at the St. Louis Cathedral, which is right there next to the river. And it's like one of the focal points in the French Quarter. And it's like, if you go in there, you're just like, holy cow. It's like, this dude got married here. Jeez. Okay, now, on to Negan. Oh, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah, I always forget that one. Every time I see him, I still think the, you know, well, looky what we have here.
He nails that part really, really well.
He is so freaking awesome as Negan.
Like, did you ever
read the swagger?
Did you ever read or hear he did an interview when somebody asked him about him getting the part, what his reaction was? Did you ever hear anything about that?
I didn't hear the reaction to it, but I did hear the call that he made when they called him and they're like, hey, we're casting for a part and we think that you'd be good for it. And he goes, it's Negan, isn't it? And they're just like, we can't tell you. He goes, no, it's Negan and I'm doing it.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
He knew what it was right off the bat, and he told his agency.
He knew exactly the character.
He told his agency. He goes, I don't care what it costs, what it takes. I want that part. I'm doing this part. And he totally got just really into it. Immediately became a fan favorite on set. Works really well from what I hear with a lot of the other actors and everything like that. You know, is always willing to help out and everything. And
he is the type of, see, like when on Walking Dead, like the governor, like he was a dude you wanted to die. Negan, you don't want him to die. You want them to fight, yes, but you don't want him to die because he's that cool.
He is what you would call necessary evil.
Oh man. he's so good in that character. But man, he's been acting actually since 1991. Been doing so many just like random things that he popped up in, just like nobody would ever know.
It's a lot of B and C.
It's one
films.
Of those movies. Okay, he was in Fred Claus, Man Getting Parking Ticket. Like, okay, all right. But then he pops up, does P.S. I Love You. And oh, one weird little fact about this is that Gerard Butler didn't know how to play guitar. And so he kind of like learned a little bit just so he could kind of play the part. Jeffrey Dean Morgan did not know how to play the guitar at all, but he ended up learning to play guitar for the role, despite the fact that he only plays guitar like once in the entire like movie.
It's one scene.
One scene. And you can't even really tell that he's playing guitar for the most part. But he actually went and learned how to play guitar from... what's her name? The Wilson sister that plays guitar. Nancy Wilson from Heart. I had to think about that one because it's Anne and Nancy. So I had to think Anne and Nancy. I'm sorry, Nancy. I know you're great in your own right and you don't need your sister. So yeah, but went and learned guitar from her and she's an amazing guitarist. But he's been doing all these different things, showing up in random TV shows, doing bit parts and stuff like that. But P.S. I Love You, he's got a small role, but he does a very good job in it. But it wasn't until like really The Walking Dead when people were just like, holy cow, this dude's awesome. And then now he's also like Batman's dad.
You see, I kind of disagree with that. I think 2009 when Watchmen came out, I think that really put him on the map as a...
I would say that put him on the map for the industry. Like for the other people like in Hollywood were just like, okay, this dude's actually a solid actor. We can try and put him in something. But I think that he didn't really enter the zeitgeist of American pop culture until The Walking Dead.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. All right. I see what you're doing now. I can agree with that.
Yes. But yeah, he's done a bunch of different films that,
he was also really good in Rampage with The Rock.
Yeah, he was. Actually, that was a good thing for him. So I was quite surprised with that.
He did a lot better with his accent in that movie than he did with the accent in this movie.
That he did. Oh, man. That's
He had a lot of really good one-liners. I felt he worked really well line for line with The Rock.
Yeah.
And
the other thing, I know for a lot of the nerds out there that, you know, follow like Supernatural, though, he was on Supernatural for several seasons.
He played one of the people's dads, right?
Well, he played the dad of the Winchester boys.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why he popped up there. But the last movie I remember actually seeing him in, you barely even see him, and that was Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice, where he plays Thomas Wayne. So he gets shot, and then the Martha Wayne was played by the girl who plays Maggie in The Walking Dead.
Hmm.
And so I was just like, how'd that happen? Like, did they just both audition and like then they found out and they're just like, hey, I'm doing that Batman movie. Oh, I'm doing that Batman movie too. Who are you? It's like, oh, I'm playing Martha. Who are you playing? Thomas. It's like, what?
No way.
Man.
That's so cool.
All right. So one more main actress, though. And this is the titan of the film. I mean, this is the one that they probably paid a lot of money to.
Yeah, this is probably.
Well, who knows? I don't know. She could have possibly just been like, no, I'll do it for whatever amount. But that is Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates is just one of the all-time greatest actresses, like, in Hollywood.
It's my wife's
in my opinion.
It's my wife's all-time favorite actress.
She has just been going strong. And just to tell you this, okay, so I've had all these Wikipedia articles up, and I've been going through their like list of movies and stuff like that. Everybody else's, like, they're all on their actual Wikipedia page. Kathy Bates has a separate filmography page. It is not on her actual main page. She has a separate page just for the filmography.
I can only assume because of how extensive and long it is.
So I'm going to go to Kathy Bates here. She has over 200 acting and directing credits to her name. Yeah. She started in 1971 in a movie called Taking Off. She was an audition singer as her role, and I'm not joking when it says that in the credits, she was credited as Bobo Bates.
Bobo Bates.
I don't know why, but this is what it is. So, yeah, she has just been going nonstop since then, and it's just kind of amazing. But I will say this, like, obviously, I mean, we're going to talk about Misery here. She's brilliant in that.
She's nuts.
She is insane and just so good. And I remember George R. R. Martin, actually, he sat down with Stephen King and they were talking about, you know, like writing horror and stuff like that. And he basically asked Stephen King, he's like, why did you write like the worst horror story for authors? Because he wrote Misery, which is all about a crazed fan kidnapping the author, making them write the story that they want, and it's like the just torturing him nonstop. And he's just like, and George R. R. Martin was just like, this is a legitimate fear, like, from every author now. It's like if they didn't think about this before, they are definitely thinking about this now, that some deranged fan is going to kidnap them and break their legs.
Well, and I can see why, you know, George Martin would feel that way, considering he kills like 17 million people in every book he writes.
that is very true. Very, very true.
You just give up having a favorite in any of his books because you have a 99% chance that they're going to go bye-bye.
Yes. The other one that I definitely would want to talk about would be her role in Titanic as the unsinkable Molly Brown. And she was so good as like the just like smart, quick-witted American woman.
Well, you know, sort of happy-go-lucky, you know. She kind of broke up the rich, snobby attitude that
you see
a lot of the characters portray in that film.
Yes.
She also did really well in Blindside as Miss Tui.
Yes. I would also like to point out that she was also in Fred Claus.
Was she the one giving him a ticket?
Nope. She was Mother Claus. So. Okay.
That would have been funny.
That would have been hilarious. But yeah, they like, man, it's kind of hard just to you look at any of these freaking Midnight in Paris, the great Jilly Hopkins.
Well, now let's
the
step
boss, away. Bad Santa 2.
Let's step away from film for a second and go to her roles in American Horror Story.
Yes.
They are absolutely out of this world, just hands down. Extremely good acting for all the different parts that she's been in the last, you know, 3 to 4 seasons and everything like that. But her first one during Coven was probably the most sinister role. I'd consider just even a little bit more sinister than Misery for her character and whatnot. And it was borderline disturbing to watch most of those episodes because of what you see from her past and everything. And that really... To me, you know, for her TV career, cemented her in as one of my favorite actresses.
Yes, yes. And that brings us to a close, basically. I mean, there are some other actors and stuff, I mean, obviously in this movie, that are, you know, that have their own following, you know, people know who they are and that kind of stuff. But they're just, I don't know, further down on the list, and I feel we've already talked about the cast a lot. Director, we have Richard LaGravenis.
I'm sure he really appreciates you.
Originally from Brooklyn. It's French. I'm so horrible with French.
Make Google say it.
I don't want to make Google say it.
At least it'd be right.
He did Freedom Riders, Behind the Candelabra, Beautiful Creatures. The Fisher King. The Fisher King is such a good movie.
I really enjoy when directors and actors or actresses do more than one movie together. It shows that they obviously got a good relationship and everything like that, because that would explain why, probably casted Hilary Swank in this one. And
he has not directed that many movies, but he's been working as a writer, producer, director, and occasionally even an actor. We talked a little bit about the cinematography of this movie. It is so well done, and the editing is so superb that it just flows seamlessly through the different points, almost to the point of confusion sometimes, because there's no clear transition between what might be a flashback and then the modern setting, other than like maybe a slight change in like lighting or something even. You talk about the scene where she goes to the couch and, you know, she's remembering him playing the guitar and stuff like that, because she's having a conversation with him. And then, like, the next thing you see is that he's not there and she's asleep on the couch. And it's just like, you know, it's such a great transition to from one thing to another that you barely even notice that it's there. Like, and that is the job of a good editor.
Yes.
So, he obviously orchestrated this, directed the movie in such a great way that it looks stunning and it is coherent and it works and is just a well put together film. So yeah, there's that. I'm not really going to get into the producers because I don't really care right now, blah, blah, blah. But it's just, this movie is a solid film.
It is.
I've got my like my minor little things with it, as I do with any film. But overall, this movie just works very well together.
No,
I think that anybody should watch this. If you like romantic comedies or even just good drama, it's a solid film.
I mean, that's why I picked it. Growing up, or even to start dating and whatnot, it definitely would not have been a pick, you know, early on for me and whatnot. But the more I've watched it with my wife and everything, the more I've come to appreciate it, especially also just the longer, you know, I am married, the more I, you know, come to appreciate it and care about it and everything like that. And like I said, it's one that you, if you come across and it's already on TV and you enjoy it at all, you can just sort of put it on and watch it, and you're going to pass on the time really well and be happy that it was on.
Yes. So rank-wise, 1 to 10, what do you give this movie?
I give it a solid 8.5.
Okay. I know last week I gave it a 7. This week I'll give it a 7.5.
Fair enough.
Why not?
Mine's a little bit higher. Like I said, it has a little bit more sentimental value with and everything like that. So it's going to be a little bit more important to me or likable by me. So
yeah, we need to find a movie we hate. That's what we
got
to do.
Oh, that's easy. If you want to do one that we hate, we can do that next week. I already got it in mind, but we'll keep it a surprise.
Okay, fine. I thought we were going to do something else next week. That's fine. Either way, folks, this has been Grab Your Popcorn. I have been your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me was David Kalista.
Thank you for listening. Enjoy your time. Watch the movie. Until next time.
Yep. And remember, folks, if you do watch that movie, don't forget to grab your popcorn.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.